Hello and welcome to Bucket List Board Games, the podcast where board gamers come together to talk about board games. Today is going to be something a little bit different, but we'll get into that, I'm sure. My pal today are the bananas and custard that is Craig Smith.
Bonjour.
The pie a la mode of Drew Leonard.
Guten Tag.
And the Chippendale, specifically the chipmunks, not the dancers, that is Matthew Wilson.
That's me, hello.
And I am your host, Luke Pickles, the cool combination of chocolate and honeycomb that you all come to enjoy. Today's episode, as I've said, is a little bit different. We're not going to be highlighting just one game today. Oh no. We are doing something that I'm sure has happened to all of the board gamers out there. You have finally managed to arrange a game day when everyone has been able to turn up at the right time, in the same place, and you're excited. You're just ready to open the lid of one of your games. And wouldn't you know it, the rest of your friends just can't agree on what you want to play. You find out that your friends are a bunch of unagreeable sods who just won't submit to your will. So you're going to waste the next half hour of your precious game time arguing over which game is best, and ultimately everyone will go home a little less satisfied than when they arrived. Much like so many of my first dates. The order of today is we are each going to offer up what we think is the best two-player only game and talk about it for a little bit and ultimately end up with a sort of recommendation list of somewhere between 4 and 8 games, depends on how we do with this. Could we have just called this a top 5 two-player board games? Yes, but we are mostly Euro gamers, so why would we make that easy for ourselves? I was expecting more laughs during that, but there we go. That's better. If we can just move, there you go. If we just move that slight chuckle around in the edit, Jay, that'll boost my ego.
Editing challenge for Jay. Yeah. Make Luke sound funny.
I did my best, but there are limits to what an editor is capable of.
Yeah, do that, Jay. Someone try it, please. And if you could follow me around in real life to make me sound funny, that'd be even better. So, two-player games. Gentlemen, who do you usually play your two-player games with? Obviously not yourselves, because they're two-player, unless you're feeling frisky and you want to two-hand something.
I would say the vast majority of my gaming these days is done two-player, because it's mostly me and my partner in our house. So we've got like a handful of dedicated two-player games, but then pretty much everything we've got kind of gets two-playered, unless we're out seeing friends. But even then, we often split into twos. So yeah, I definitely get a lot of two-player gaming going on.
Yeah, same. Most of the games I own are not actually two-player only, but they get played as two players with my wife, except for the game that I'm going to talk about today, which she would not like.
I also play the majority of my two-player games with my partner. To be fair, we do have quite a lot of what we call the pub lads, which are our specific two-player only games that we take with us when we go into the pubs and when we go on holiday and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was quite difficult to actually narrow it down to just one, potentially two. So we'll see what everybody else comes up with as well.
Yeah, I kind of agree with all that. It's mostly my partner that I will be playing games with two-player. I do also have who I call my board game husband, who's the guy who introduced me into board gaming. He and I will play games together quite frequently, just the two of us. But like you guys, I don't have that many two-player only games. I have predominantly games that play from 2 to, let's be honest, 2 to 4 is your sort of standard Euro range. There might be a solo mode, there might be a fifth player, maybe 6 if you're feeling frisky. So who would like to start us off with their game? Drew, do you want to give us a little insight into your mind of games you play with one other person only?
Yeah, why not? So my two-player game that I've brought for this episode of the podcast is War of the Ring, which, for those who don't know, is a kind of a strategy, dudes on a map type game set in the story of the Lord of the Rings. I think what it does well is that a lot of board games that are adapted from like a book or a film or something, you don't get a lot of flexibility with that, because there's just the story and the story happens, and it can be difficult to make a game from that sometimes. But I think War of the Ring does that really well, in that it steps back from like the plot of the books and it gives you this kind of overarching, like it gives you the war, right? The sort of the war that is going on in the background of the books all the time, mm-hmm. that you see bits and bobs of, but that is not the sort of the main narrative, I guess.
So you're not just following along the Fellowship, or rather you're playing as the Free Peoples and then Sauron's army, is that right?
Yeah, right. So there's the Free Peoples player who their sort of primary aim and win condition is get the ring to Mordor, destroy the ring. And you have a deck of the cards that is the Fellowship, and they all have their particular abilities. And they usually just end up getting thrown under the bus on the way to Mordor in exchange for taking less corruption damage. But yeah, then like at the same time as you're doing that, you have to be defending against the Shadow player whose main way of winning is just throwing armies at you until you lose. Mm. But each player can lose either way, right? So if the Free Peoples destroy the ring, then they win. And if the Shadow overtakes too many cities, fortifications or whatever first, then they win. But you can also win as the Shadow player by finding the Fellowship and corrupting them to the point that they can no longer carry on to Mordor. And the Free Peoples can win by taking over Shadow settlements as well. There's a lower bar on that. Like, you need 10 victory points as the Shadow, but only 4 as the Free Peoples. Mm. So it's sort of, it kind of feels like not a proper win, but also it happens rarely enough that if you do manage it, it's like, okay, well, I feel like I've earned that.
It's an interesting concept to take a reality that has been established, I say reality in the loosest of terms, and rewriting it to fit your own personal narratives. Like, you could go, oh, well, what happens if the Ents turned up in the Shire?
Yeah,
or
absolutely. Yeah.
What if they did actually just ride the Eagles all the way to Mount Doom? Mount Doom? Is it Mount Doom, or am I thinking of something else entirely?
It is Mount Doom.
Yes, it's Mount Doom.
Okay. This is where we're going to find out some things about me here, folks. I am not much for Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. So this is going to potentially revoke my nerd card.
Heresy. But yeah, it's good. And yeah, like, I think it does that really well, because like, although it doesn't really sort of involve itself much in the characters, it kind of forces you to make the same decisions for the same reasons. Or like, not forces, but you're incentivized to do the same things as the characters do, like, because that's the world, right? The characters make sensible decisions in the world because Tolkien thought about that. And then, yeah, if you're the Fellowship player and you're going, right, okay, well, the fastest way to get to Mordor is through Moria, but that's dangerous, so maybe we go the long way around, but that's dangerous too. So yeah, I think it does a really good job of adapting the source material, and also is a good game.
It's an interesting concept, certainly. I mean, I think it's out of print at the moment, so it is quite hard to come by. I don't know if there's been a new edition. It's a little bit tricky to come by. I'd say it's not one that's ever appeared on my radar, it has been on my radar because people have talked about it. I've seen a couple of videos where it's been played and mentioned, but it's not one that's ever enticed me so much, because I don't really care for that narrative and that fantasy.
That's fair.
That particular story, which is fine. Like, if you're going to have an IP game, if it's an IP you don't like, you're probably not going to play that game, let's be honest.
Yeah, reasonable.
Craig, Matthew, have you played War of the Ring? Do you know anything about it? Or are you just going to shake your head and look sad?
I know a fair bit about it. I've always been intrigued by it. I think it would probably win the award for the biggest two-player game, because it's huge. And it does look quite daunting, I think. I actually recently got the War of the Ring, the card game, and that's pretty cool. It also has a two-player variant in it. It has like variants for 2 and 3 and 4, and they're all a little bit different. And then maybe that'll be my gateway into playing the full game at some point.
One of us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm standing on that precipice. I'll quite happily jump in. It's just when I've got the money to do so.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, technically I jointly own mine with the person I play it with.
But yeah, the card game's pretty cool. It kind of follows the same things you were talking about, in that you've got the established characters and you've got the established places, but everything can get mixed up depending on your deck and what comes out when. And you're almost, I think, yeah, it does help tremendously to know that story quite well. And it's interesting to sort of play and see it get mixed up a little bit, and seeing characters pop up in places they wouldn't, and kind of building your own story out of these established events and things. It's interesting, and I bet the full game is really, really fun as well.
Craig, any thoughts?
I can't really comment on it, to be honest, because I, like yourself, tend to only really buy into IPs where I have an interest. So Lord of the Rings isn't something that I'd be interested. I tried watching one of the films and thought it ended about four times. So that kind of like started and ended my journey onto that. So yeah, it's not one that I would play myself, but I have heard like really good things about it. So
it might be one that we pick up if it's ever at a convention and someone sat there looking sad and going, can someone play with me? Then I might go over and go, I'll join in. I'll give it a go. But I'm not going to actively seek it out, I think. It's probably...
Drew, we'll do our own episode. We'll talk about Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, we'll put it on the spreadsheet.
It's too many games on that spreadsheet that we haven't got enough people to play. Yeah, although for a two-player game, that probably is quite appropriate. All right. Thank you, Drew, for your contribution for today's game day. Craig, what would you like to offer up to the altar of judgment?
So my favourite two-player game, my two-player game of choice is The Fox and the Forest Duet, which is a trick-taking cooperative game, specifically the duet version. I do like Fox and the Forest. However, the whole twist of sometimes trying to lose the game on purpose to try and be humble, so therefore gaining more points that way, it does start to cause that little bit of friction. As my partner will tell you, it got to a point where I just lost the game so many times, it just stopped being enjoyable for me. But the duet version is a really good version. So basically, you have a small board in the middle of the table, and along the path, there are gems that you need to collect, and all the cards are numbered. There's three suits, and the cards are numbered 1 to 10, and each card has a movement value on it. So whoever wins the trick moves your counter that many spaces towards themselves. All the odd-numbered cards have special abilities, so it might be things like the player who plays after you doesn't have to follow suit, or you can swap cards from your hands, or you can swap cards so you can change the trump suit, which might make it quite beneficial. There's three different levels that you can play as well. And yeah, it's just a really good game. I think it's an interesting one because obviously it's a trick-taking game, so it means that communication's very limited. So it's probably a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a strange one to suggest in that sense. And, you know, some people, the idea of limited communication games, it's just not for them. But I think the thing that really works for me with The Fox and the Forest Duet is that when you're playing the game, there's this, you can kind of start to work out what your opponent's hands go in. You can kind of, like, the more you play with them, the more you can know their tells, or you know their, you know, how they generally play the game, and it does then start to become a bit easier to win. Easier, not easy, because we still probably lose more times than we win, but I just really enjoy it. It was the first game that I actually introduced my partner to, because it was me that got him into games. And for that reason, you know, it has a lot of sentimental value to me as well. You know, is it the mechanically the best two-player game out there? Absolutely not. But for me, it is just a very good game. And it would be, if you were wanting to introduce another person to games, I think you wouldn't go far wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, trick-taking has always been a mechanism that I've kind of gone, do I like this? I think two-player trick-taking games are difficult to get right. Because, as you say, there is that communication issue. There is necessarily a balance issue and card counting that you can have problems with, but it sounds like it's a good one. I like the idea of the different powers on drinking. Unsurprisingly, I've not played this one either. So I like the idea of the sort of different powers that are available to you with the odd number cards, and it's not just a straightforward, here is what you're doing, here is the trick, and then that is all you're doing. There is some atmosphere. I always enjoy a rule which involves being humble.
Yeah.
I think it's Everdell that has the starting player condition is the person who is the most humble, which always means that someone just goes, well, that's me, obviously. I'm the most humble. Not sure you know what humble means there, champ. Sort of thing, which is always amusing. I've seen it played a few times. I like the sound of it. It sounds pretty cute. I think the artwork's pretty nice as well.
Oh, the artwork's absolutely stunning on it as well. Yeah, the artwork's absolutely stunning. That and, you know, that obviously goes the same for the competitive version as well. But I think it is just, it's just one of those games where you kind of then get to a point where you just feel comfortable in that silence. So, you know, a lot of those misgivings when I've played other trick-taking games like The Crew, which is obviously another, which is kind of the big cooperative trick-taking game. I just get to a point with that game where I just find myself getting really stressed out, not knowing who's got what cards, and 3 to 5 players that game. So it is harder to kind of keep track of what everybody may or may not have in their hand. So there's just kind of like a little bit of a reassurance in this only being a two-player game that if you play this game together enough, you start to learn each other's game and it just becomes a nicer experience for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Two-player games, I think, are very good for that, or at least a two-player experience, which is specifically designed for two players, is always very enticing. I think that's kind of why we're doing this list, because let's be honest, most of the time, if you're playing a game, you're going to be playing it two players. I think that's one of the weird facts that you find when you look at like the number of players on something like Board Game Geek. The player count generally is two for quite a lot of people, so it's definitely one to sort of encourage. Matthew, Drew, do either of you have any thoughts on Fox in the Forest? Duet or regular?
So we have the regular one. That was actually going to be my backup pick. It's, yeah, as
still can
you
be.
It's technically a different game, isn't it? So, yeah, as you kind of said, Craig, it's a perfect little pub game, and it's often one that I will just put in my pocket once we're heading out the house if we're going somewhere for a drink, because it's nice and simple, it's easier to set up. We still quite enjoy that friction that comes from the regular one. Maybe we haven't played it quite as much as you and your partner yet. But yeah, it's certainly one that we play a lot here. It's a good game. I think we will probably get a duet one at some point as well, because you sold it pretty well.
Drew, any thoughts?
Not really, unfortunately. I've not played it. I often see it in my local board game cafe and go, ooh, that art looks really lovely. So I'll just turn off that notification that's beeping in the background. Yeah, I often see it in my local board game cafe and think, yeah, that looks really nice. But like, I've never got it down to have a proper look, so maybe I should. While we've been speaking, I've put it on my Want to playlist on Board Game Geek.
Nice. Well, if we've done nothing else, and we have at least enticed two people to try the game, unfortunately, they're both on the podcast, which doesn't necessarily help. But there you go.
If only we had listeners.
If you're out there and you're listening, please let us know on our various social medias. Say hi. Just come say hi. If you bump into us at a cafe and you recognize us from our emoji faces, then first of all, well done for studying our digital faces so much that you could discern who we are. And second of all, hi. Let's be friends.
Maybe not too good friends if you know us just from our digital photos, though. That's
yeah. maybe we'll just make that the one meeting, and then we'll just sidle away into the darkness.
Yes, if we wanted to be friends with real people, we wouldn't be on a podcast.
Oh yeah, that's true. What? I did have the option to do something social today, and I decided to do this.
There you go.
Well, it's interesting that you mention cafes, Drew, because you know what you get a lot of in cafes, board game cafes in particular? You get a lot of coffee. You also get a lot of board games, and you often find if you go to board game cafes, you find a lot of artwork there that is related to board games that is available around you. And if you at home are interested in board game related art and or coffee, then can we entice you to have a look at Meeple Design, who we are affiliate members of. Meeple Design makes a great blend of coffees and board game artwork. I am surrounded by their artwork at this exact moment. I am looking at 8 different posters. In fact, the ones I'm looking at directly across me are Sagrada and Lords of Waterdeep. They are lovely little things that I enjoy just having in this room. So if you are interested in seeing anything that Meeple Design do, go and check out our affiliate link that is in the description of this episode. You can go and have a look at their coffee and at their artwork. And, I'll let them know that we sent you. Go and check it out. Meeple Design. Thanks, guys. At some point, I will get better at doing ad reads. I've been doing them on other things for a while, and I am not good at doing them on the fly. I'm better at segues on my D&D one, let's be fair.
I have a map of Middle Earth behind me. War of the Ring, send me a free copy. I'll say it's good. Yeah, I'll talk about it and stuff.
Well, why don't you talk about a game that you already have a copy of?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk about my game. So my game is probably the two-player game we have that comes off the shelf the most, and it's Onitama. If you guys have played it.
This was on my list, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. I guess a bit of context. If you haven't played it, it's described as an abstract strategy game, but it is essentially speed card chess. I really like the idea of chess, but I have no one to play with. I don't own a chess set, and I'm not very good at it at all. But Onitama kind of strips a lot of that away and just is just this nice, speedy little chess-feeling game where your moves are dictated by cards. You only have five pieces, and you can move those five pieces depending on each card will have like four different spaces on a 5x5 grid that you can move. But as you're using those cards, you're moving them around the board, and the second player is also using the same move sets. So there's still a level of strategy there. You can kind of anticipate the moves that they're going to be making whilst also making sure you're making the correct move. And it's, yeah, it just, it moves so nice and quick, and it feels satisfying. And it's just, yeah, it's a really, really fun game. If you guys haven't played it, I would recommend giving it a go.
This is one that I have played. I played this on Board Game Arena once a while ago. So it has been a hot minute since I've played it. And it's an interesting little game. It's one that I would need to have physically, because I remember growing up playing a lot of chess with my father and grandfather. And it's interesting. It's an interesting thing to play. I don't know that I necessarily got sold on it from a digital play only. But I do know that my future sister-in-law does have a copy, so I might borrow it from them and give it a go.
Yeah, I think it, much like actual chess, I hate playing actual chess online. There's something that's just so much more satisfying about having the pieces in front of you, and I think it's probably the same for Onitama as well. It's a really beautifully presented game as well, and it's nice and small. Again, like another good pub game, it's one that you can sort of transport around easy. And the pieces are well made, and it's a really nice little game.
Mm. Craig, you made a I know this game. Noise.
I know this game, yeah.
Pray tell.
Oh, it's exactly like what Matthew explained. Like, it's such a... I've got to be honest, chess, there's just too much going on for me. So being able to kind of like have that tangible, these are your options that you have available to you in front of you. Not only does it make it a really good game to play, but it also makes it a really simple game to teach. Like, if I'm at my monthly board game group meeting and there's somebody that is just sat there and they want to play just a two-player game, it is the one that I go to first, because it is literally just a case of, these are your two cards for this turn. These are your options. Whichever one you use, that then goes into the middle. So it means that I'll be able to pick that up on my next turn. So that's just something for you to be mindful of. Bing, there's the rules taught. Let's go. And yeah, it's a great game. It is one of those that's rules light, strategy heavy. Like I say, it was one that I contemplated choosing, but I'm glad that it's been brought up. So that, yeah, great game.
Excellent. Drew, have you given it any thought or any play at any point in your life?
No, again, unfortunately, I've not had the chance. It does look lovely, though. It's another one of those that I see occasionally and think, oh yeah, I'd like to play that at some point. But yeah, now you've spoken about it and I've looked it up on Board Game Geek, I know exactly who I'm buying it for, because I have a friend who would absolutely love it. So,
again, is that friend you?
Well, hopefully I'll get the chance to play it with him.
Buying games for friends with yourself in mind is the absolute best way to buy presents for people.
Exactly.
It's very often how board games are bought between me and my board game husband. It is very much a case of, we would play this game together. So let's not worry about the fact that our wives / fiancés will also be around. But we'll probably play this game with just the two of us. And then it's fine. Excellent. Onitama. It looks like a good little game. I do need to give it another try. I think I do need to try it physically to really get to grips with it as a game. But it's definitely one that is on my list to seek out at some point, for sure. And then it comes round to me and what I have chosen for this list. Or at least for this one, before we get into a debate over which one we want to pick as our fifth place. So I'm at points of a struggle. Which one do I go for? I think I'm going to go for the one that I have highest on my top 50 list, and that is going to be Seven Wonders Duel. I think Seven Wonders Duel, which is a two-player only version of Seven Wonders, which is a card drafting game about building your civilizations, is a fantastic little system that you can get to the table. It's very rules light. It's very easy to say you're just going to be taking a card from this supply and you're going to add it to your own tableau of things. You've got different resources that you're going to be gathering over three different ages. You're either going to build the resources or you're going to build them out to build a building. The resources are always just there. So that is what you have for the rest of the game, unless this thing happens, then it might get rid of them. For the most part, you're just going to have those things and it's going to sort of build up from there. You've got three different ways that you can win. It's either going to be victory points if we run out of cards, it's going to be going up on the military track, or it's going to be capturing those science icons. And that kind of gives you three different directions to try and balance at the same time. And if you ignore two of them, you kind of do it at your own peril. If you ignore just one of them, it's at your own peril, because you're going, ah, crap. Suddenly you've got to make up ground on the military track and you have to stop them from getting up there. And it's really nice, and it's light enough that you don't have to worry about teaching it to a new person. And I think because of that, it makes it really easy to introduce the Pantheon expansion, which introduces a bunch of gods into the world that you can shuffle in and just add those gods into them. They just give you little extra one-off powers that you can do throughout the game. And I think it's really a neat little addition that just keeps it from getting stale. I really enjoy Seven Wonders Duel as an experience, because you're not doing the problematic thing of card drafting games where you're going, all right, so I'm going to take this card and I'm going to pass these around, and then I've got these cards from you, and somehow you have seven cards, you have five cards, you only have two cards. How has this happened? I have nothing. How did you manage to screw this up so badly? Which always seems to happen in a card drafting game, unless you've got something, some way of mitigating that chaos. And with Seven Wonders Duel, you have all of your cards laid out in front of you in a pyramid construction shape that you can build out from. And I think that is a really neat way of doing a drafting game. The cards are all there. They're all available. You can see, mostly, everything that's coming up. And you can make decisions and kind of count the cards a little bit to go, okay, well, if I take this, then you'll take this one. And then I can take this one. And then you'll take this one. Or you'll take that one. In which case, I'll need to take this one. But then you'll take that one. And it just has that nice little thinky element behind it, which I really enjoy. Yeah, Seven Wonders Duel. I think it's great. It's real good. End of sentence.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Overruled.
Yeah, I've never played it, but you make it sound pretty cool.
I think it stands up as well, because it's been around for 7 years or so now. I think it came out in 2015. I think it still holds up as a great two-player game. It's just solid.
I think when you were explaining it, like, yeah, it just sounded like a really good game. It kind of, the way you were kind of explaining it about there being three different routes to victory, it reminded me of another game that I did think about putting on the list, which was Splendor Duel. I'm not a massive fan of Splendor, but I really like Splendor Duel. And then I looked at who the designer is of Seven Wonders Duel, and it's Bruno Cathala's kind of like put his input into it, which is the same as with Splendor Duel. So I was like, that whole idea of three different routes to victory, and you can't take your eye off too many routes because then you're doing it at your own peril. It has got all the hallmarks of those, that game as well. So I think Seven Wonders Duel is probably like a naturally one I'd enjoy as well.
Are you saying that board game designers use their own ideas in other games?
It's mad, no, isn't it? Absolutely
that
crazy.
That can't be right.
Crazy.
That can't be right. No, they'd never do that. No one would duplicate farming multiple times. No, it's a good one. Drew, have you had any experience with Seven Wonders Duel?
No, I haven't. I should just get, no, sorry, I haven't played that written on a t-shirt, really, haven't I? Which probably wouldn't work on a
This is what happens when you play War of the Ring. It's so big, there's yeah, no time to play anything
I've
else.
I've only ever played War of the Ring, yeah. And most of that time...
The only thing you can play, yeah.
No, unfortunately, I've not played it. But again, you do describe it well. I've put it on my Want to Play list.
It's a good one. It's on Board Game Arena. It was one of my most played games of last year because it's just so easy to table and play and just run through a game. So check it out on BGA if you haven't given it a chance to. I think then we have to do what we all need to do, and when we come to a top five list, is actually have a fifth number, a fifth game into here. So I think, gentlemen, it is time for honourable mentions / nominations for our next game on this list, or a final game on this list. Drew, we were talking about this before, you don't have a second one, do you?
Well, technically I do. I have Twilight Struggle, which my brother bought for me and my wife for Christmas 1 year, and which has just stayed in the cupboard, sadly, because I think it's not really the kind of game that my wife would like, and I didn't have the heart to tell my brother that, so I hope he doesn't listen to this. But yeah, so I'd like to play that at some point, because I've heard it's very good, but I've never had the chance to play it.
So for the purposes of this list, you're effectively out, because you don't, although you have got a second game, you haven't actually played it, so it's kind of, so do you want to judge, and we can describe our second picks to you?
I like that plan, yeah, let's do that.
By allowing me to fob off responsibilities to someone else for once. All right, Craig, do you want to give us your next pick game?
Yes, so my second choice game is Caesar, Siege Rome in 20 minutes.
Caesar? I barely knew her.
So yeah, great little two-player game. So one of you plays as Caesar, one of you plays as Pompey, not Portsmouth Football Club. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to take control of different parts of the board. You do that by playing these little chits that are double-sided. So they have numbers. I think they all add up to six. And so it might be four on one side, two on the other, or six on one side and zero on the other. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to control different parts of the board. What you're also trying to do is you're trying to win the bonuses that are in the middle of each region. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily the person that wins. It's not the person that wins the region that gets the bonus. It's the person that completes the region. So sometimes it can also be beneficial to forfeit a region to just get the bonus. And those bonuses are things like being able to choose from an extra chit at the back of your, from the back of your screen. It can be taking another turn immediately. And it, whoever gets their control tokens on the board first wins. And it's, you know, the name doesn't lie. You can play a game of Caesar in less than 20 minutes. It is, without a shadow of a doubt, the ugliest game I own. It's so ugly that it actually does a 180 and is actually quite cool. It's so ugly. The bags that you're drawing your chits from, they look like the kind of thing that your grandmother would bring back from Rome from a souvenir shop after one too many limoncellos.
I think you were going to say bring back from the dead. Scared me a little bit, but it was like, okay, that's where we're going with this. Cool.
Yeah, it is a great game. Like, it is, I just have a great time with it. And it's, mate, I do want to try the other ones in the series. So there's Dogfight and there's Blitzkrieg. I haven't quite got around to doing them yet, but yeah, Caesar Sees Rome in 20 minutes is my honorable mention.
I have played Blitzkrieg World War II in 20 minutes. I didn't particularly get on with it, but I think it was the first one in that series, so it may have been refined, and Dogfight, I think, is a further refinement, I think is probably the right way of describing them, so the natural progression of the three games. Although interesting that he's gone to World War II, then went back to Rome, and then came back to World War I. That seems an interesting way of doing things, but you know what?
Yep.
You do you, boo. Matthew?
Can I say patchwork just to be a troublemaker?
You broke up there. I couldn't hear the filth that is coming out of your mouth.
No, I'm kidding. Another two-player game that hasn't come off my shelf in a while, but it is a pretty cool game. Has any of you guys played Odin's Ravens?
I have played Odin's Ravens once in a board game cafe.
Same. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's apparently like an old Norse game and has been around for a long, long time. But it's essentially like a race game where you're both Odin's Ravens, funnily enough. And you sort of lay out before you start a bunch of cards which have different locations on them, like mountains and lakes. And then you have your own sort of hand of cards where you need to match the cards in your hands to the cards that are in the middle, and you can kind of move along the track. But then you've also got cards that are just for messing with the other player, so you can kind of move them back and you can change the track around and stuff like that. And it's another quick little, nice, tidy little two-player game. And also patchwork.
It's Odin's Ravens is an interesting small race, I think. You are very much running around trying to fly through the nine realms thematically. I think the second edition is a lot prettier than the original edition. The original edition is hideous. The artwork in the second edition is very much stylized. It's quite nice. But it is a nice little, it's a nice light game, I think, of a nice little race, which is you very rarely see just pure two-player race games, I think. My honorable mention is, technically it's two games, but they're the same game, they just have different theming on them. and that is Star Realms and Hero Realms. They are basically the same game, just one is in space, one is in a fantasy setting, so take your pick of whichever flavour you are particularly fancying this day. For me, it's Hero Realms, but I prefer fantasy over sci-fi. In it, it's a two-player deck builder game where you are going to start off with a standard deck of 10 cards, I think it is off the top of my head, and you can play the cards out, you're going to be shooting at each other, you start with 50 hit points, and you're trying to bring the other person down to zero. But there's four different factions of cards in each of the sets that you can play out, that you can start to buy more cards. It's a deck builder, you're buying cards, adding them to your deck, trying to win. And there's a lot of deck builders have the issue of it's a very slow builder because you can only buy one or two cards each turn that don't really do a huge amount. You have to stack them up. Like Dominion has that problem. You have to slowly claw your way to it. But with Hero Realms and Fantasy Realms, you start off with amazing cards right away that you can buy from the row. So you can just go, right, I can buy with six money. Cool. I'm going to buy these things and chuck them into my deck. And then you've got immediately some great cards that you can play on future turns. In Star Realms, you've got, the one I've played more actually, is you've got the faction that focuses on just shooting and doing damage to your opponent. You've got a faction which focuses on discarding cards in your hand, a faction that focuses on gaining extra money, and another faction that lets you draw more cards into your hand that you can keep playing them. And it's a really neat system that works really well at two player. And I think you can, if you've got the cards for it, you can put two starter decks together or two decks together and just go, right, four players, 2v2, if you really wanted to. But I think it is predominantly meant to be a two-player game. And then with Hero Realms, there is a campaign mode that you can do, a co-op campaign mode, where you can just sort of trundle your way through taking on the roles of, like, fantasy heroes, like a rogue or a ranger or a wizard or that sort of thing. And it's a really neat system. I think it's a really good one. Not to be confused with Fantasy Realms. That is a completely different game. But, yeah, Star Realms and Hero Realms, that's my nomination, honorable mention. I guess technically it's two games, but it's also sort of just one, because if you learn one, you can learn the other. It's just symbology. Yeah, no, it's pretty easy to learn. Anyone played either of those?
Afraid
no.
No, but I did buy Star Realms for my friend's birthday earlier this year. I've just not had a chance to play it with him yet. It does look pretty cool. I always like a good deck builder. I started playing Magic last month, which is probably one of the stupidest decisions I've ever made.
Certainly not as expensive.
Well, I haven't spent any money on it yet. I've been playing it online. Oh, but I'm really tempted to.
Well, whether you get into Magic or whether you get into Lorcana, that's the question.
I just like having loads of cards. I think that's what I've learned about myself. Just all the cards.
Magic is definitely the game for you. There are a lot of cards.
Yeah.
Or any Uwe Rosenberg game. There's usually a lot of cards in those boxes.
Except Patchwork,
which is not a game. That's all right. It's not my most hated game. It's just a game that I won and I didn't understand how, given that I was losing the entirety of the game. It felt weird. Anyway, those are our honorable mentions. So, Drew, it is up to you to consign one of these games to the list and throw the other two into the trash fire that Patchwork is currently sat on.
I think they all sound like good contenders, but I think I have to give it to Odin's Ravens, which may be partly because it's the only one that I've actually played. But yeah, I just really enjoy it.
Pandering to the judge!
Yeah. Oh.
Pandering to the judge!
Yep,
it will corruption. Not stand.
I really enjoyed playing Odin's Ravens. To say it's just a fun little race game, and like it's fun to be able to just go, oh yeah, you can't go over this square now because I've taken your mountains away or whatever. It was a while ago I played it, but yeah, just it's good fun. It's a good quick silly game for two people.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice little silly game. All right, so Odin's Ravens takes the whatever the fifth place medal is, I guess, in comparison to the others. So those are going to be our top five games that we are recommending for you to play at two players. Two players only, if that's all you happen to have with you. If you like this sort of thing and these conversations that we have, let us know in our social media posts. Like, speak to us on Instagram, which I think is where our main one is, to be perfectly honest. Just search for the Bucket List Board Gamers, you can go and find us over there. And let us know if you have any other suggestions of these sorts of conversations we can have, and also any other regular games that you think we should discuss. And so, as is always the case, it's time for us to put the lid back onto the box and say thank you to our panel, and for them to say where you can find them. Drew?
You can find me on Twitter at Drew_Leonard42. Wait, no underscore. I did this last time, didn't I? Let's take another run at that. You can find me on Twitter at DrewLeonard42 or on Instagram at Crucible_Games.
Very good. Craig?
If you want to tell me that I was robbed and Caesar should have been number 5 on the list, you can find me at The Midland Meeple on Instagram.
And if you want to tell him that he's wrong, then you could also do that at The Midland
Meeple. No. You go to Drew Leonard to do that, no.
Matthew?
You can find me in my house, probably window shopping for Magic cards. That's probably what I'm going to be doing.
And I have been Luke Pickles. You can find me on the Game Emporium, where friends and I talk about board games, D&D, and just generally like to play stuff together. Until next time, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the Bucket List Board Gamers. Goodbye!